You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and today we're talking about partying in our pants. Yeah, tomorrow's my birthday, so today's episode is all about what goes down in our birthday suits. God, why am I just beating around the bush? Okay, fine. Today we're talking about normalizing getting our freak on. God, I didn't even say it there. This episode is about having a healthy sex life. There. I said it. If you think I'm squeamish here, oh man, just wait till we get into the heat of the episode. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. How fun is it that this episode is sponsored by a company whose mission it is to make our lives more fun and fit and fab? Yes, today's episode is enthusiastically sponsored by FabFitFun, a company who sends a party to your mailbox vis-a-vis their seasonal subscription box with full-size beauty, fitness, fashion, and lifestyle products. Now that I live in an apartment building where getting packages is easy, I am up to the cest with these FabFitFun boxes, which arrive at my doorstep, causing Tommy to bark at whomever dropped it at my doorstep like we're under attack, but then add some, as cliche as it sounds, fun to my life. As someone whose normal way to treat herself is by going out to a planty meal or getting a foot massage because my feet are always sore, damn you high arches, it is not at all in my norm to buy myself adorable face masks or girly mugs and cheerful, colorful makeup. And to be honest, it's quite fun to get this stuff sent straight to my home since I don't adore a Sephora. Anyway, if you want to be a lazy girly girl like me and get things like Free People eye masks and Tarte lipsticks sent right to you, try out a FabFitFun box. It retails for $49.99 but always has a value of over $200. And if you use coupon code PARTY10, you'll save $10 off your first box, making it $39.99 if you needed a calculator to subtract 10 from $49.99 like I just did. Just kidding. But not kidding that if you use PARTY10 at checkout on FabFitFun.com, you'll save $10 on a FabFitFun party in your mailbox. My guest today is to sex what a nutritionist is to food. Just like a nutritionist can help you eat more naturally, Shan Boudram, a sexologist, which makes me think of Barbara Streisand and Meet the Fockers, you know, bingo, bingo, bongo. Well, Shan can help you hump more naturally. Shan Boudram is the internet's most sought-after sex educator. She has over 25 million YouTube views, and she's shared sex and relationship advice on ABC's The View, MTV, The Steve Harvey Show, CNN, New York Times, Forbes, and Time Magazine. Her book, Laid, love it, was a Canadian bestseller. She rocks a really cool live Facebook show, and she sells vibrator necklaces, which, yes, to answer your silent question, are for both decoration and functional use. I met Shan when I introduced her at the Good Fest, and I saw women just get wet and wild listening to her talk about having a healthy sex life, so I knew I had to bring her on my show. Full disclosure, I'm admittedly a pretty prude lady, so I definitely had a couple of squeamish moments throughout our chat. But as Shan says, fear ruins everything, so I just went with it. She also says she has orgasms in her sleep sometimes, so if that's something you're struggling with, not sleep orgasms, like awake orgasms, there are lots of helpful tips to come. Pun. Okay, here we go. Shan, thank you so much for coming on my podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. It was awesome to connect with you at the Good Fest. Your energy is so dope. So when you invited me on, I was like, oh my gosh, yes, I'd love to be here. And I love plants. So I'm excited.
Perfect. Well, thank you. Your energy is doper. And you rocked your session all about good sex. And it was amazing to just see you up there with your, it wasn't a whiteboard, just a, what is that? Just paper.
It was just paper. Yeah. You know what I mean? I can't act like I invented that. It was just paper.
Well, you rocked your paper. So starting from the top here. You originally got your degree in print journalism, but somehow, sometime, you made the transition from journalism to becoming a sex educator and a clinical sexologist. How does one decide to make that leap, and how, you know, what did that look like?
Yeah, when you go to school for journalism, you know, day one, they say, write what you know. If you know Britney Spears inside and out, you don't have to try to make yourself into a news reporter if you know weather inside and out. So for me, it was like, I really was passionate about sexuality and relationships. And so all throughout school, like even my final thesis project was like a relationship magazine that I created. It was just my niche topic. And so I was writing a book while I was at college, and at the end of school, I actually failed a year because I was so dedicated to my book, and it took me a year, you know, later to graduate because I was trying to get that published. It didn't get published until 2009, which is a year after I graduated. And at that time, that's when I made the shift to officially not just from a journalistic perspective of sexuality, but also putting myself into the narrative, because with journalism, it's mostly an objective sort of bird's eye perspective of what's going on. And this was my first time throwing myself into this, the narrative as well. And I saw that it really worked. So I like to think that the basis of how I approach sex education really does come from a place of storytelling. So I honestly think that the journalism component was very necessary for me. And in many ways, because I never had a vision of being like a brick and mortar, you know, come into my office or go to a pharmaceutical company where I clock in 9 to 5 type of sexual educator. I always saw myself like the Martha Stewart, you know, who was in the media and who was selling books and sharing stories, but this was her expertise. So to me, the journalism basis made a lot of sense.
Fascinating. So, well, A, you are the Martha Stewart of sex for sure.
Listen.
Which is a hilarious thing to say. But also, that's so fascinating that you've kind of always been into sex, even, you know, before you transitioned to doing this full time.
Yeah, for sure. I actually think that it dated back even earlier. Like, I was always sexually precocious. Like, as a kid, my Barbies were banned from being naked. I was like, just really like physical with my family, and everyone's like, just stop. You know, I would just be a very touchy feely person. I was always into love, and I always had like an affinity for touch. I started masturbating, I'm pretty sure, like pretty early. Like, my first sexual experience I recall, I was like 5.
What?
But it was like, it was me and my friend with our pillows. So there was no touching each other. But still, I remember it being very sexual. And she told on me, so I got in trouble. And I was like, girl, get over yourself. No one touched you. But and I got, of course, it was like I had a Catholic school upbringing. So a lot of my natural curiosity was really repressed. And so it was not, and it's one of those things I learned later in life that oftentimes we think about moving forward or finding our passion or finding our goals. And oftentimes it's really about going back to what you originally were drawn to, going back to your early talents or, you know, what you were really good at as a kid and finding a way to monetize that. And that's what, to me, this was. It was just me taking a passion that I've had basically since I was born and transforming that into a lifelong career.
That's awesome. And that's a wonderful little nugget of business advice for people. It's so true. Go back and see what you've always been interested in, what you've always excelled in. And that's just so incredibly fascinating that, you know, just touch and sexuality stuff has always been a part of you. That's very unique, I think. Unless, I don't know, will you tell me through, you know, the work that you do, would you say that you meet more kind of sexual people than not? Or is that a strange question?
No, I mean, I think 100% that's, mind you, because I'm in the field. So sometimes when I tell people, oh, I talk about sex for a living or I'm a sexologist, there's like how specific or how niche or how weird. And I'm like, oh my God, like I met 5 other people like me today. So there's times, I think, especially living in LA, that you forget that your liberal job isn't the most common thing in the world. But I'm in a world where it feels very, very, very common to me.
Wow. Well, what is a sexologist?
I would liken it to a nutritionist for food. So it's the study of sex as it relates to criminology, biology, psychology, sociology. For some people, it's, like I said, like it's pharmaceutical, it's educational. So you can work in a variety of different places. Like some sexologists that I know work, for example, at a pharmaceutical company. Some are hired by Match.com and they work behind the scenes there. Some people work obviously in a therapy office. Others do curriculum. They write school board curriculum, and some do private curriculums only. And there's this like really cool center that I'm linked to in LA. It's called the Center for Healthy Sex. And that's just a bunch of different sexologists who get together to create workshops and programs and literature that goes out. So I would kind of, you know how you can find a nutritionist in a hospital.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can find them at the gym. Sometimes you can have a private one. And of course, there's ones that go on TV. So I honestly think it's a really similar field of interest. And I always describe it as that because a nutritionist may not be able to cook you a bomb-ass meal. That's not what their job is, you know? And so they're more the understanding of how food works. I'm like, same with sexology. Sometimes people approach me like, you must give the best blowjobs. And I'm like, I'm not actually sure if that's true. Like I can give you the body parts and maybe the systems involved, but there's no way that I'm not, you know, going around testing out different things so I know that I'm the best chef in town. And so I think it's more of a bird's eye perspective of the field rather than like a hands-on approach to learning about sex.
This is just so fascinating. I know for you, this is totally normal to talk about. But I feel like for at least myself and other people that I know, talking about this stuff, sex and blowjobs and all that is squeamish. Do you think, you know, for the common folk, not your colleagues, but like regular people, that more people get squeamish talking about sex than not? And why is that? Why are people so awkward talking about it?
I mean, whatever you don't talk about, even like, I think pooping is kind of the same thing. Everyone poops, but we're just societally told it's a very weird and uncomfortable thing to talk about. And there's a lot of things that we can all relate to that someone, however many years ago, decided was not normal conversation. And so it's just exposure. That's all. And I know that for a fact because I'm so exposed to talking about it that it's like breathing to me. And sometimes people are like, you're so brave. It's so brave. But I'm like, it's not brave to me. I'm sure it's same for you. It's not brave to talk about your food experience, even though for a lot of people, that's a very taboo area. So I think it's just exposure, how much you do it, how comfortable you feel doing it. And then how much you see the oneness in it all. I see a lot of oneness. I don't look at myself as separate or different or my experience as being super unique. I listen to people's stories all the time. I have a one-on-one counseling service I do on Sundays. And in those, I hear the same stories over and over again. So I'm like, what's there to be embarrassed about? Where 90% of people, even if there's like some small nuances that are different, but majority of people have the same problems, same concerns, same goals. And so really, we're all in this together.
Well, let's talk about some of those problems and goals and stories. I'm curious, what are like the most common struggles that you help people with?
I mean, majority is like the am I normal question remixed in some fashion. You know, I can't get over someone who I think is, what's it called? Emotionally abusive. Is that normal? I don't orgasm during sex. Is that normal? I only crave sex once a month. Is that normal? You know, I don't have desire for my partner anymore after years of being together. Or, you know, how do I have these sexual fantasies? What do I make of them? So it's just mostly because you don't have a place to talk about it. You know, if you had this like love for pizza and you didn't know anybody else did, you probably would be like, is this a weird thing that I have? And then we're all like, no, we all like this like cheesy, fatty, pussy, bready, non-nutritional thing. We're all in this together. And you're like, oh, okay. Like now I feel less abnormal. So I also think that the narrative of what a normal sexual lifestyle is or a normal intimate lifestyle is, I honestly don't think I've even met anyone who fits in that. So that also causes a lot of confusion too.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. So what is, I guess, a healthy sex life defined as? I mean, I feel like we all get fed information and you're saying that you don't even think that people adhere to what maybe is defined as that. What do you define a healthy sex life as?
Well, because people think of it like this, like a healthy sex life is monogamous with one partner and you want to have sex with that partner constantly until they don't want to, then you don't totally don't mind not having sex with that partner for as long as they don't want to. If they want to wait 10 years, you're comfortable with that because you love them so much. But secretly, you both have this desire to do it every single day, 10 times a day, and everyone orgasms and everyone has their desires fulfilled, but no one has desires that are outside of the five activities that we've all decided are okay. And we all have vanilla sex, but it's also exciting. So it's like all this like bizarre, you know, and we accept each other for who we are, but we also want to be turned on by something new. And so I think it's just contrasting messages, you know, but I think a normal sex life is one where everyone's pleasure is at the center of it. and pleasure gets to be to, and I did that at the workshop. The first thing I did is, how do you define pleasure?
Yeah, how
because
do
for you,
you
pleasure might be closeness, might be an orgasm. Some people, pleasure is just like being close to or connected to somebody, or it's a kiss. So when you define what that is and you place it at the center of your sexuality, and both people can repeat the other's definition of what pleasure is, and then we find activities and we do it as often as we want or as little as we want, but we always check in with each other and we don't expect to always be in sync and wanting the same thing at the same time. So to me, a good sex life is flexible, and at the heart of it all, it focuses on each individual.
And it sounds like communication has to be really a big part of that, you know, like where you have to identify what pleasure is to you and communicate that, I guess, to your partner so that you can kind of please each other, however that looks to that individual person.
I agree with that 100%. Yeah, I think I mean, that's the thing that people hate to hear. Like the other day I was in an Uber and I came out of the Uber and I was saying to my friend, I was like, man, like, how do you indicate to Uber drivers you don't want to talk? Like, I can fully have my laptop open and be typing and they'll still try and chat. And I always think it's a weird conversation, the Uber too, because they're always like, what do you do? Like, why are we, let's talk about something innocuous. Like, why does it matter what I do for, and also because for me, what I do for a living is never a short conversation.
Yes.
So I'm always like, oh, like, I don't want to sit in a lecture with this Uber driver. But so I was complaining and they were like, well, why don't you just simply say like, hey, I have some work to do. Do you mind if we don't, you know, chat, if I can focus? And I'm like, I guess, right? I could just communicate. That's an option. So that's just the answer, the annoying answer to every single thing of like, I want this and this other person doesn't, or there's this thing going on where we have contrasting ideas. What do I do? And you're like, you explain your side and you have the other person explain their side and you find a compromise or you decide to agree or disagree. That's what you do every time without fail.
Well, when sex is involved, you know, there's also like, I guess, physical needs. So how do you, like, if your desired frequency is less than your partner's desired frequency and you guys communicate this, like, how would you advise somebody to, quote unquote, compromise in that situation?
It's a difficult one to navigate because, I mean, I think compatibility happens on many different levels. Like everyone has, if they have a partner, something that they completely connect on. They're like, oh my gosh, we never have to fight about that. Whether it's money for them or families, they both love each other's families. Sometimes it's work because they both understand each other's work schedule. Sometimes it's sex. You just both have an equal sex drive. And so I do meet some couples sometimes who everything else clicks for them and they're compatible, but their sexuality is the one area that they're just completely mismatched. And that happens. And so if that does happen, it's not an indicator that this person's not the right partner for you or that you've selected wrong, especially if you wouldn't prioritize sexuality as like on the top of your list of most important things to look for connection on. So I would say if you don't have the same compatible, you're not enmeshed in that way, the same way you would have to do with finances, you've got to really like make an accurate, like a serious plan about it. Like me and my partner, finances is our one area of incompatibility. And we often talk about that. We have to talk about it pretty frequently and it has to come up and we have to make plans. And it is an area of our relationship that's annoying because everywhere else is just this natural flow. But we acknowledge that this is our area where we're on different pages. And so naturally, we're going to have different ideas, different priorities for spending. And just it'll just always be that way until it's not that way. So I would say if you don't have the same sex drive as your partner, one, it's compromise, and two, it's a lot of talking, and three, it's being patient with it not being easy and that being okay, and being thankful of the areas that you are compatible and that you don't have to do this dance in. I mean, mind you, if you find yourself doing this thing of like, oh, like in several areas of your relationship, that's a time to start looking at, okay, maybe this, you know, person and I just aren't meant to click.
That's really insightful. I like that we all have different areas that we like just flow in. And then there's areas that are maybe less flow and that, you know, conversing and compromising is so necessary. But I guess as you're saying that, maybe because of what I see in movies or, you know, what we're taught, you're not supposed to like schedule sex. You're not supposed to like compromise. You're not supposed to even talk about it. You're supposed to like get horny all the time when you're in nice clothes after a fancy dinner and just like go crazy. And so when you talk about, you know, scheduling it or, you know, having lots of conversations about it, how can that still be like sexy? How do you have a healthy and happy sex life when you're talking about it all the time?
It's a matter of really knowing yourself and knowing your partner. I think the basis of any good relationship too is like realizing that your partner's not a crazy person. So, you know, I often had that problem with friendships that you're like, oh, I think what's happening here is like, you just don't trust at the heart of it all that my feelings are valid. You think that maybe I feel things that are out of proportion or don't really apply to the situation. And so when you're with your partner, you have to be like, okay, if they have a sex drive, there's a reason for that. They're not just like a horny, you know, out of control animal. And if they don't want to have sex, there's probably a good reason for that. And so once you have that base understanding, I think it makes it easier to have those conversations. And there's times that there's compromise too, because there's several activities that anyone can do to look. It's not, sex is not just based on intercourse, and sex is not always a 1 hour activity. So I think that there's compromises that you can make as long as you both approach it joyfully. Like, well, hey, I'm not in the mood for the 1 hour experience, but I really would love to do this for you because I accept your drive as valid. I accept your desires as necessary, and I want to satiate them. Versus like, well, I don't want to, and you do. So that's the end of that discussion. Then it becomes, you know, a conflict of interest. So I'd also, you know, kind of find your different levels of days that you're what you're willing to do. So don't make sex so singularly defined where that's what that means at one thing. And sometimes sexuality or intimacy period doesn't have to come with any type of genital petting. It could just be cuddling and making out. And I think for a lot of partners as well too, that's a big part of it, because people draw away from physical touch altogether because they associate that with, well, if I give them a little bit, they're going to be asking for the full thing. And I don't want that full thing. So I do think it's important to separate where you're like, there are some times where we just mutually pet. That's the thing too. Like my partner's love language is not physical touch, but mine is. And so I have this thing where like, we'll lay in bed and watch something and I'll stroke him and then he'll stroke me. And I know he doesn't really care for the stroking, but the mutuality of it, you know, he gives it back to me. And so I think that there's just finding like, okay, I know that you're not like this usually, but let me find a way to make this enjoyable for you because it really is important to me. So there's just compromises on both ends. But no one has to pretend to be anything that they're not. And that's okay. If you're not super into it, you don't love giving head or you don't love doing something, you don't have to pretend to be, but you do have to make an effort to meet the person halfway.
Yeah, as you would with any other topic. I mean, if one person is really clean and tidy and organized and the other person is like a mess, you would talk about that and you would say, okay, can you just try putting your shoes away? It would really mean a lot to me. And the person can say, okay, well, that's not in my nature, but like, I respect you and I love you. So I'm going to try to make a conscious effort to put my shoes away. Like right? It sounds like you just apply the same thing to sex stuff. I guess we're just taught like, you know, oh no, you're just never supposed to talk about it. Just do it when the mood strikes, and the mood's supposed to always strike. And I think that at least can screw with our heads.
Oh, I 100% agree. I think that expectation that it's supposed to be, and that's the bizarre thing I always say with sexuality period, is that everywhere else in your life, you're taught, like, no one is told like, well, if you're really a good doctor, you'll just walk into a hospital and know what to do. You know, you're just not. We all understand there's a training process. You have to get to know yourself. You have to be around peers. You have to talk about it constantly. You have to find your specialty, admit where you're not that great. And we know that there's like a 10-year gap between you and being an awesome doctor. And I think with intimacy, we're all like, well, you're 15 now. Good luck finding the one.
Yeah.
And, you know, your grandma found her soulmate when she was 14. So catch up. And that's just a very confusing message without any intimacy training or sexuality training. And we set people up to learn the hard way, which I just think is really, really not nice.
Yeah. And to have lots of guilt or, you know, insecurity or just weird stuff around it.
Exactly. Yeah. Or to feel like I'm not good at this and it's me because I'm supposed to just be naturally good at this if I'm a functioning human being,
right?
Which just doesn't work that way, like I said, in any other area.
It's so true. It's so true. And I love that we're kind of having this conversation to normalize it. And I love that that's what you do. You know, you make it like we're talking about food or we're talking about cleaning and it's sex, which is a very taboo topic for a lot of people. Well, on that note, is scheduling sex bad? Like, talk to me about that. Is that totally weird to be like, all right, Fridays, you know, we're going to try to set up the moment and try to make it happen? Or is that like, would you not support an idea like that?
I support it. It depends on like the parties involved, because for some people, having the expectation of sex is what repels them from it because they're like, they don't necessarily want to. And the fact that the pressure is on, you know, there's this thing called sexual accelerators or sexual breaks. And some people, that thought, that looming thought, is like a sexual break because it triggers performance anxiety. So if you're that kind of person, obviously, I would suggest the other method of like have intimacy a lot without the mandatory follow-up of sex. And then sometimes let intimacy naturally lead, you know, with you at the in the captain's wheel. But for other people, you know, who are just super busy, maybe have a new family, are readjusting to something, and it's just like you can't find the time.
Or a dog.
Let me tell you. A dog. Right.
Damn. Sorry, continue.
And I think it can be sexy to be like, Friday's our day. And then like Friday morning, you're sending sexy texts. And Friday in the day, they're like, they send a picture to you of whatever they want you to wear. Like, it can be fun. So I think, you know, and I, my relationship started out as like a fuck buddy relationship. So I actually, when we moved in together, I'm like, man, I kind of miss elements of that, because a fuck buddy relationship is all about planned sex. That's what we do. We make a plan to have sex. And so whenever he would come over, the intention was set that. So like I would have candles and like I have scented body lotion on. It was just always, that was what we were there to do. And as we moved in together and we became, you know, 9-to-5 relationship or however the hours are now, it just becomes more like, oh, okay, we're just sleeping together. Let's just do this because we're both here, versus like, this is an intention that we set. Mm-hmm. So don't look at it always as like a dreadful thing. I think there can be really fun moments in that, which can bring back, you know, an old spark to the relationship.
That's awesome. Well, you know, you mentioned scented lotion and candles and, you know, kind of texting sexy stuff through the day. What are some other advice you have for people who might, you know, like you said, maybe crave sex once a month? How, like, what would you offer them to try to up their sex drive?
I think, one, you have to know, especially for women, a lot of the times we don't feel horny until we're like 10 minutes into the act.
Real. That's like a common, that's like a fact.
Yeah. Dr. Ian Kerner talks about this in his book. It's called The Big Sexy Book, which I love. Dr. Ian Kerner, period. But and the book I'm reading right now is called Come As You Are. That's like a really popular book, but it's talking about sexual acceleration, sexual breaks, and women's breaks tend to be really sensitive. And so there's a lot of reasons we can come up with not to have sex. And there's evolutionary reasons that might support, you know, that theory. But that knowing that about yourself, I know that about myself. So a lot of the times, like, I'm really not in the mood, but I'm like, no, it's like, let's just kiss, touch, feel our way into it. My partner's awesome about foreplay, which is, you know, really great, because it's not like me figuring out if I'm into it is like, I'm dry, it's midway through and this is painful now. It's usually like, oh, we've been kissing for 15 minutes and now I get to see if I want to continue or not. So I would say, you know, encourage yourself, even if you don't feel it, just to see if you can get in the mood. One, two, acknowledge what your sexual accelerators and breaks are. If you know your breaks are a dirty kitchen, you can't focus. If you know your breaks are your dog hasn't gone out for a while and you won't be able to focus knowing that like they probably have to go or they have to eat. So acknowledge what your breaks are and have your partner know them too. So that way you guys are not trying to force it during a time that's just never going to work for you. And also know what your turn-ons are. If your turn-on, like I talk about sex languages a lot, which some people, theirs is cat, where that means like they want to be the ones to come to you first. And, you know, a cat, if you like go up, start petting it, it'll like repulse away. But if you're sitting there doing your own thing, the cat may come up to you, sit on your lap, like, and then it will flirt at its own pace versus like you being the one to pounce. So knowing that about yourself and then communicating that to your partner to be like, it'll happen just on my time, or it'll happen, but please do the laundry first, or it'll happen, but we have to be mentally connected first. We have to have had a good day together. So when you find out that for yourself, it becomes less of a mystery of like, when am I, when aren't I, and more clear for each partner.
Wow. This is, oh, my mind is being so blown during this conversation. I just feel like I've never talk to anybody about this before. I mean, admittedly, I'm like a very prude person. Like, I won't even change in the women's locker room.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So cool. Did you say it's cool?
I think it is cool. I mean, it's just kind of like, it's got like an old fashioned charm to it.
Thank you. I find it really lame. But, but so, I mean, just to hear you say things like, know your breaks. Like, I didn't know people had breaks. I didn't know that, you know, having the stress of my dog is a legitimate reason to not want to have sex. Like that is an actual issue, but I didn't know it was normal that other people have quote unquote breaks as well.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I think people's breaks are get way more sensitive than that. And some people, there's like actually a quiz that you can do to find out like how sensitive your breaks are or aren't, but I don't know if any of that's really helpful, because it's just, even that whole thing of like, how many times a week should we be having sex?
Yes,
and you're like, so should. If you're having sex one more than you're supposed to, you're good. If you're having one less, you got to pick up the pace. And so the question really should be like, am I happy? Am I satisfied? Mm. And taking the normal factor out of things and more just trusting yourself, I think is the better way to go.
I love that. I mean, just like I encourage people not to compare their food to, you know, other people's food or Instagram people's food. Just eat what makes you feel good. It's the same for this. Don't compare your sex life to other people's. It's a totally different thing.
Yes, agreed. Yeah.
So you've mentioned a few times both love languages and sex languages. Are those the same thing? Are those different things?
They're different, but they're kind of the same concept of love languages is, you know, you can't speak to someone in Swahili if they speak English. Doesn't matter what you're saying to them. It's just they're not going to receive it the same way. And sex languages is similar where it's like you can't try to approach someone sexually and like get them turned on if that's just not the language they speak. And so the sex languages are direct, mental, negotiator, sensual, and cat. It would be like, I mean, arduous for me to define them right now, but they're kind of just like direct would be, you know, I want you right now. And that's actually my sex language. If someone, well, not anyone, I'm like a homeless person, but if my partner, you know, like looks me in the eye and just tells me what they want to do and like how much they want me, like that's automatically in it for me. And he, for example, is very mental. So like makeup sex is not an option because if he's angry, he's just disinterested altogether. So we don't have that type of sex at all. So I just think it's just knowing, okay, like I don't try it during certain times. I don't try to hug him during an argument. It's just not going to go well. And he doesn't try to like light candles and be all frilly with me without, you know, being directly passionate because you just won't get the same result.
How do you learn what your sex language is? I mean, you are like an expert, but like common folk like me are like, what are you talking about right now?
I think if I listed them for you, I'll send you a link to them. You probably wouldn't connect with one. I don't know if there's an actual quiz online. I learned this from a workshop that I did. And I don't even remember the workshop.
All right. Well, send the link and then I'll post it in the show notes. And so then people can read the list and it'll just kind of be obvious which one you connect with.
Deal. That's a deal.
Cool. And then love languages. Is that the type of thing where some people, because I've been hearing that going around lately, like my love language is like giving gifts or whatever. Is that, what are love languages?
Yes. The love languages to me, I'm so proud, has become like a household thing.
Yeah.
It's the first step we like really had in intimacy education being normalized, where that's a thing people know about. Like if I asked you like what, you know, are you good at math or science? You probably would know because you have some experience with it. And this is our first time having something that most people are like, oh, my love language is X. And so it essentially is, there's five of them as well too. And it's just how you predominantly experience love, not how you like to give it. It's how you experience it. And I had this, you know, person I was talking to who was like, well, what if me and my partner have different love languages? Like, does that mean we're doomed? I was like, no. That just means that like, oh, their love language is words of affirmation. Me and my partner, for example, his love language is words of affirmation. It's at the bottom of my list. I'm really not, because I'm also online, so I get a lot of words of affirmation from strangers. I don't crave it in a relationship, but his is, and mine is physical touch, and that's not really his either. But all we have to do is just prioritize each other's, and then we're good. You know, understand that like, you know, okay, this is what he speaks. So I go out of my way to give compliments and to say reassuring things. And he goes out of his way to give touch, even though it's not second nature. The mistake most people make without knowing their love language is they speak their love language to others. So you always hear those relationships where it's like, they always buy me gifts and I don't even care about gifts. Like, I just want quality time with them. And that's that person because they're intention is good. It's just like misdirected because they're like, well, this is how I would want to be loved. So I'm trying to love you this way. And they're getting really confused and angry with why that's not working.
Wow. Yeah. That makes so much sense. Like I love giving cards. I love writing people like birthday cards, holiday cards. And I love receiving like really heartfelt, you know, long cards. And my fiance couldn't care less about cards. Like I've actively seen him like get a card and like 5 minutes later, recycle it. Like he's like really not into it, but I've expressed to him how meaningful that is to me. And so he gives me really beautiful long cards. And I guess that's what this is. Whereas like, I don't give him cards anymore because he doesn't care about it.
Right.
But,
yes.
Yeah. So, but he gives me cards. So I guess that was a job well done in terms of love language for us.
You did it.
Nailed it. Wait, so can you tell me the five love languages?
So it'd be words of affirmation, quality time, gifts, acts of service, and physical touch.
Physical acts of service, is that like, what is that?
So that's like, take the garbage out for me, clean the house, you know, take my taxes in. If I have a flat tire, you be the one. Like acts of service is like my second love language.
Yeah, I feel like I have a few. Can you have, or are they just kind of ranked for everybody? Or is it like you have two? Okay. It's more.
Yeah. And that's actually a thing too. Cause like, you know, my partner, for example, is not really a complimenter. So it worked out fine, but it's at the bottom of my list. But then I was like, bro, like, I don't mean never. Like, it doesn't mean that, you know, and if you have gifts at number five, it doesn't mean like I never want a gift. Like,
it's funny.
We all like these things, but we have different importance of them. So yes. I don't think anyone's like, oh, I can't stand quality time, you know, but it may just not be like they probably might prefer like just if you do see each other once a week, but during that week you guys are touching, that's probably higher priority for them than seeing each other every day and never being physical.
It sounds like learning your love language and having your partner, you know, kind of rank theirs could be an amazing tool for improving a relationship.
I think it's important. I learn people's love languages if I'm working with them. I think it's important for every relationship because it's essentially how do I assure someone that I care and that I'm on their side.
Yeah.
And so if I have a new job, like I know the love languages of everyone on my Facebook show, for example, well, all the people above me, because I'm like, okay, if there's these words of affirmation, if it's gifts, for some people, it's even like, because I know one of my producers, hers is giving gifts. She loves to give gifts. So I always make sure to like use her gifts in her presence. And I know that means a lot to them. So I think it's important all around, not just in romantic relationships.
Yeah. So you can just pick up on people's love languages. But for people listening right now, I mean, we'll list them in the show notes and then they can just go look and figure out theirs and then maybe kind of try to discover it in other people.
Yeah. I think you can, but you can also ask.
You can.
I mean,
is that
there's
weird?
People. No, I don't think so. I mean, it's kind of become like a conversation piece. And I think people love to talk about it if they've done it. So, and if they haven't done it, you'd be like, oh my God, go. Cause it's a free quiz. You go to fivelovelanguages.com and it's a 20-minute quiz that's free. So everyone has access to do it. There's no barrier.
Ah.
So I would just say like, it's a great, people love talking about love languages. So you can, don't ever feel like you can't just flat out ask. You don't have to pretend to be a genie.
I like that. Well, you know, how do you suggest people bring up sex, you know, with their partner? Like if someone's listening right now and they're feeling connected to what we're talking about and they're like, okay, well, I guess I could really go home and communicate better with my partner, but I'm nervous. Like he or she is not really, you know, doesn't seem to be open about that. I think they're going to think it's weird that I bring it up. Like, what do you tell people in that situation where they might be embarrassed or ashamed or nervous or just uncomfortable having this conversation with their partner?
I mean, if you feel all of those things, embarrassed, nervous, and ashamed, and start with yourself first, like start with your own education, get yourself comfortable, know what you want to say. I think language is deeply important because oftentimes like let's talk about sex, but people don't know what to say other than like put a condom on and don't give me a green genital. Like, what am I really trying to communicate to you? And if we know, okay, here's how I orgasm, like, oh my gosh, yes, has this glossary of terms that describes the different ways people experience or women in particular experience orgasms. Like, if you know that, here's my fetish, here's my nose, you know, here's what my fantasies are. Like, what are your fantasies? You know, here's what some of my triggers are. Here's what some of my hot buttons are. Here's my breaks. If you know what to say, the talk becomes less like, this is confusing and weird, because I know, you know, how to express and I have a goal in mind. So if you feel very uncomfortable, it might be an indicator that you have to learn more. Same thing, anything else. Like if you going to go to a gym class for the first time or a cycling class, you know nothing about it, you're going to feel really weird and uncomfortable and out of place. But once you're comfortable and you're in your stride, you can do it. Same with cooking. You know, it's very uncomfortable once, or people have like an aversion to cooking until they know how to do it. And there's love and passion in it. But once you arm yourself with a basic amount of information, I think what's really important with the talk about sex is bring the elements of what makes sex good and apply it to the talk. And that's actually why I got involved in this field in the first place, because I noticed a major gap where I'm like, okay, sex itself and sex in the media, even for example, is hot, it's sexy, it's fun, it's salacious, it's wet, it's enticing. We all like want to look, but talking about sex is like dry, boring, monotonous. It's scary, it's fear-based. And like, there's a massive disconnect here. You're like, how can something be so good, but we don't apply that to how we talk about it? And we're all losing. So when you have the talk with someone, don't make it like performance based or you're not doing this or I'm dissatisfied. Make it fun. Make it sexy. Like, ask someone, like, what are your fantasies? Like, here's what mine are. Like, what's turned you on the most? I ask my partner so many questions sometimes. I feel so bad. Like, I'm constantly like, when's the best? When's the worst? What'd you like? Minute 12. What are your thoughts? And so I just think I might overdo it, but I try and make the conversation joyful. It's never pressure-based or performance-based. It's always like curiosity, sexiness, lasciviousness. So try and take that technique and apply it, even if you start small. And then hopefully your partner engages in that too, and then also starts to like get excited to talk about sex.
Yeah. And I like the, you know, that you do have to educate yourself, which again, you know, I feel like sex is kind of like maybe like brushing your teeth or something, where, you know, we're taught everyone brushes their teeth. Most people do it twice a day. Okay, bye. Like, there you go. Go on with your life. Brush your teeth. Like, we'll never really discuss it again. But you know, sex is clearly much more complicated than that. You know, based on what we're talking about today, I think until this conversation, I thought that we're all just like, yep, we have sex. We make babies sometimes. Sometimes we just do it for fun and bye, you know, and I guess there's like a hell of a lot more to it than that.
Yeah. I mean, it can be as much as or little as you want. Like, I don't want to overwhelm anyone and say like, you know, and I can say as someone who's been in this space for like 13 years at this point, I am still learning constantly. So there's always more to learn, like anything else, like food. You know, some people think that food is like, oh, I don't think about it. I just eat whatever. And you're like, well, you kind of have to know a little bit about it just to have a basic understanding of yourself and know yourself a bit. But the more you want to know is up to you. If you want to go totally, you know, crazy about it and learn about your blood type and how things interact, if you really want to do that and learn about your metabolism, you can. But if you just want to know the basics, that's okay too. Whatever allows you to have a good relationship with food at a pace that you think is achievable for you, do that. But you can go as little or as much as you want.
Yeah. It's so, so true. The parallels are pretty amazing. Okay. I have to ask you this because I'm sure there's somebody wondering this. How do you help women who really can't or don't orgasm start to orgasm?
Anorgasmia, I think, affects less than 5% of women. So I think a lot of people misdiagnose themselves as being anorgasmic, but they're probably thinking because they don't orgasm during penetration. So homologous means like an anatomical twin, like our shoulders are homologous to each other. So nipples, for example, on men and women, they are the same thing, but they have different functions. And a lot of people think that the homologous to the penis is the vagina. It's not, it's the clitoris. So that is our primary source of pleasure. If, for example, the clitoris is shaped like a wishbone. And so when we're all born, we begin forming as female and then we transition into male, you know, if we're XY. But what happens is that clitoris that's underneath the skin like a wishbone, if we become male, all that happens is that it comes together as one and protrudes out. So if you think of it in that term, that's what you're supposed to be stimulating. That's what you're supposed to be utilizing for pleasure. And we're told in movies and in narratives, and a lot of early sexual educators emphasize the way that men experience pleasure is the way you're supposed to experience pleasure. And that's not true. So I would say maybe reshift your focus to how do I have orgasms during penetrative sex, and maybe how do I have orgasms by myself or during oral or with manual play or with a vibrator. And if that doesn't work for you, because some people like, oh my gosh, yes, to be honest with you, the short answer to this is like the website, oh my gosh, yes, for anyone who hasn't orgasmed is awesome.
Oh, what? It's literally
OMG.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. So OMG, yes.
Okay.
But it shows women like 9 different ways because it depends on a lot of things like how big is your clitoris? How sensitive is it? Do you like direct pressure? Do you like circling? Like it has all these different languages and some people like layering where they don't necessarily, it's too much if you have direct touch, they'd rather have like a pillow in between and have that friction. So I think that that website, if you've never orgasmed before, is a really great start because it has a wide variety of people who are explaining what works for them and why. And it actually has a visual component where they show themselves masturbating so you can see how that looks. That's what I think is really liberating.
Do you think you can like manifest an inability to orgasm? Like if you've never orgasmed before, or like rarely, and you go into sex and you're like, well, I'm not going to orgasm again. Like, do you believe that the mind can play a role in how much pleasure you have?
Oh, 100%. I mean, like, we're all just this massive circuit board, right? I mean, I have orgasms in my sleep sometimes.
No, and that's, really?
That's just, yeah, that's just to show that, oh, this is completely mental. Mind you, I can't will myself to orgasm right now. So I don't know how that works. It just, I'm super convinced something is happening, but in real life, you know, and I can't orgasm during penetration, for example. But the thing about the mind is it kind of has two operating systems, like Mac and PC. They can't go at the same time. So if you are in fight or flight mode, which means you're panicking, you're stressed out, your blood pressure is accelerating, maybe you don't feel safe in that environment, it's very difficult for your body to experience pleasure in that state, to experience anything. That's why when we're in fight or flight mode, we experience less pain. We can run for longer. Like, we're just less in tune with our nervous system. So if you put yourself into a frenzy, you start focusing on how your body's not performing, or you feel very uncomfortable, yet you're pushing yourself further and further away from the goal of getting to that calm and connect state where you can be hyper-focused on how do I actually feel in this moment. And that's it's hard. I mean, to this day, like, I can take a long time sometimes to orgasm, and sometimes I can get really frustrated with it.
And you're a pro.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a chef, so I'll say it a million times over. Right. I'm definitely not going to guarantee that I can, like, I know how to make every woman orgasm. I'll send you to a website. I'm not really sure. So I think that, it's just knowing yourself and being patient through it. And then you have to remind yourself or talk to yourself constantly during the experience and refocus to what actually matters, and remind yourself that worrying about what's not working is making everything else work even less.
And this is with anything. You know, your mind controls everything and your success in everything, but definitely with sex. What are some thoughts that women could change their mindset to during sex to help them feel more comfortable and more positive and confident?
I have this video where I talk about that, like how to get out of your head. And there's a couple of tricks that, like, for me, for example, like music during sex, some people really like. I don't like it because it creates a time marker for me. So if I'm like, oh, he's been down there for 5 songs, like, it just feels every time the song switches, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know? And so whatever I can do. So I try to, like, remove any indicators of time so that I'm just focused on feeling, and that's it. I'm constantly just, like, sometimes I even envision, I close my eyes and I think about my body from the inside. I picture certain areas lighting up as they're being stimulated or touched in different ways. And so it's really important for me, and especially if I'm like, I'm not shaved, or like, oh, I didn't wipe up before. So it can be very easy for me to get distracted and start getting insecure. And I have to just be like, nope, let's just focus on the feeling. And that's what works for me. Some people, maybe they get lost with music. So I can't, like, give a prescription of what to do. It depends on how you can, it's just tricking yourself. That's all. You have to really figure out how to, like, trick your brain. And you got to have a really strong, I talk about this in the seminar, a strong shut the fuck up filter where you're like, girl, stop. We're not thinking about this right now. We're not concerning ourselves with that. We're not worrying about if we're perfect. We're just accepting that we are in this moment and trying to get praised for that in a pleasure sense. So that's, and that doesn't go away. That voice is always chatting, but you got to be really good at being that, like, kindergarten shushing teacher.
So it's normal for even you to have thoughts that you have to consciously quiet during sex.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah.
Even very, you.
Very normal. Even me.
What?
Even me.
Wow. All right. That takes everybody else, myself included, off the hook. So what does your family think about this being your livelihood? And what does your partner think? I mean, is everybody just super comfortable with the way, you know, you talk about this so freely and openly, or has it been kind of a process?
I mean, it's been a process for myself. I mean, I think that's why when I hear people who say, like, you, for example, like, I'm prudish, or some people who were very uncomfortable, I relate to them, because I'm like, it basically took me, like, maybe like 6 years to really step into this space. Cause I started out with the book, and then I was like, but I'm not a sexual educator. I'm a journalist who talks about sex. I'm not really comfortable. And then people kept trying to push me into that zone. I was like, no, I'm more of a feminist. I'm less of a sex person. And I just took a while before I'm like, nah, I'm the sex girl. So my family, I mean, and that also came from them, because initially, of course, they weren't thrilled about it. They would much rather I was studying, you know, whales or something. That it's a comfortable conversation for them with their friends and family. So no, like, my mom was like, it's just one of those things I wished would go away when it first began, that, like, okay, it's a phase. She's writing this book. Okay, she's touring for this book right now. That'll go away. So they kept hoping it would go away. And it wasn't until they came to my book launch and saw Because my mom's first response when I put up a website that was called Save Your Cherry. This is the beginnings.
I like that.
And the premise of it was like, here's the negative, because I had a really shitty teen sex life. Oh, here's the negative things that I've been through. And I was collecting stories from other people. You know, here's why it's better to make this an empowered decision versus like a peer pressure decision, because just doing sex because you think everyone else is just doesn't pan out great. So anyway, my mom, I put up a story on that site about my first time having sex. And my mom's response, I'll never forget. She was like, don't you realize? 1 second, sorry.
Oh, so emotional. You're coughing.
I know. Ooh. She was like, don't you realize there's going to be boys who are going to be laughing and masturbating at you? They're going to be just hanging out and laughing and masturbating. I'm like, mom, you have never been to a boy's house, obviously, before. No one does that. But it was like, that was her fear. And so they had a lot of fears of how I'd be perceived, a lot of fears of how I would be judged. And once they saw that really wasn't the case, they turned around. And now they're massive, obviously. And it's always different when you make money. You know what I mean? Like your parents are always like, what is this job? How do you make money? And so, you know, fast forward 13 years and I'm doing well. It's very different. And my partner now met me doing this. So, and he's awesome. I wouldn't have selected someone who didn't love it. Yeah. I wouldn't have chosen a partner who was intimidated. And people always ask that question, like, you know, was he very intimidated? Do you find he was very intimidated? And I was like, I wouldn't have picked that person. If someone. And I had partners in the past, like my ex, whom really was uncomfortable with what I did and would come to see me speak and was really uncomfortable and always started arguments with me. And it was always a problem. And I was like, it's not what I do. It's the issue. It's you. Mm. And once I made that decision to like, this is not going to work because you're not accepting and embracing me for what I admit, I believe I'm putting this earth to do. I made a switch to somebody who loved it, and he does. And it's not always easy to love it, but he does.
That's great. Well, that's all you need. You just need one person that loves it.
That's
and,
it.
And nice. I'm sure once your parents saw, you know, how you were empowering people and helping people, making a real difference in the world, they, you know, came right to their senses.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm going to use that with them. They came to their senses.
Yes. Direct quote. So your book, Laid, is that the book you're referring to? That's like, it's more of like a journalist book?
That was my first.
Book. What the hell is a journalist book?
Well, I guess, you know, it's young people's experiences with sex in an easy access culture.
What is easy access culture?
I mean, it's really referencing like the fact that you can go online right now and buy a gun. You can go online right now and get a prostitute. You can go online right now and watch porn. So easy access meaning that like whatever you really want, you could order something from Amazon and it will show up tomorrow. So how has that affected young people's experiences with sexuality? So it was sort of half journalistic in terms of like it was a voyeuristic approach to like how these changes are being made. And then also it was like a lot of vicarious learning because I was collecting stories from people, sharing my own stories so that people could not only see these stats or see the shifts, but also hear it from people firsthand who had gone through it.
That's awesome. And so this is available on Amazon. Speaking of Amazon,
this is available. Yeah, it came out in 2009, so it's an old book now. Like, there's not like Snapchat's not mentioned. Like, I think that book would do like a reprint, right? You know what I mean? Like all the important stuff now. But definitely at the time, it was, you know, a very accurate depiction of how people were learning about sex.
That's really cool. That's awesome. Let me ask you this. What are some habits? I have no good segue, so I'm just going into it. What are some habits that people have or do that block them from having a healthy sex life?
Judging either themselves or others, trying to live up to an expectation that has nothing to do with who you are, but who you think you're supposed to be. I think is oftentimes too, not doing the work. You know what I mean? Like, you don't do the work, you don't read or research. You just accept what you're told. That's, you know, obviously, because you got to come to find out for yourself. The same way I can't just walk up to you and be like, you're a nurse from now on without knowing you and knowing what your strengths and weaknesses are. So a lot of people are just assigning like, I'm a monogamous person or, you know, I'm a freak. And you're like, do you know what that means for you? Or you just like the way it sounded. So you put that, you know, suit on. So I think not doing the work is a massive part of it. And also in general, I think fear ruins everything.
Yeah.
So if you just, the biggest thing you could do is educate yourself, really. And even people I meet, like I speak to a lot of people who are very religious and have a very difficult time connecting those two things together. And we just talk and really back focus. And I look at the Bible as being rules for how to live and how to live well and how to treat people well 2000 years ago.
Yeah.
And a lot of the great teachings in there, like they're, you know, when you think about it, 2000 years ago, it would make perfect sense to wait for marriage to have sex. They didn't have birth control. They didn't have a lot of hospitalization systems, so venereal diseases weren't treated as well. So you want to discourage people from copulating all over the place because you'd be rampant with disease and babies. Now we live in a very different time where we have a lot of different tools. And even back then, for example, women couldn't read, they couldn't go to school, they couldn't get a job. And so her only means to survival is through a man. And so she has to withhold the one thing that's going to make a man want to marry her quicker. So a lot of those principles, you have to ask, like, did God intend that because he thought that sex was bad, or that at the time there wasn't a way to control sex in a way that would allow you to highlight the positive without being overcome by the negative? And that's not something I can answer for someone, but it's just piecing those things together for you to kind of figure out, okay, like, where is the good in this? You know, if necessary for you, where is the God in this? And where am I in this? Mm-hmm. And that's not something that you just wake up and know. So you talk, you read, you find a healthy group of people that you can analyze with, and then you go from there, and hopefully you get an awesome partner who's also interested in doing those exact same things.
Yeah. Well, what about technology? I mean, I feel like Netflix and chill and Snapchat and social media is like the biggest cock block right now.
It's neutral. I think a lot of things are neutral. Like even dating or online dating is neutral. It's sex is neutral. You assign what you want to it. It can be awesome. It can be negative. Netflix and chill can be like damning, or it can be like really encouraging. So I think it's just you, it's, if you are an autopilot, it can suck, but hopefully after listening to this podcast, like you're not an autopilot kind of person.
Yes, totally. Well, let's talk about food. Are there any foods? Like, I mean, do you really believe that foods have like an aphrodisiac effect?
Yeah. I mean, I know like I did like a research thing on this a while ago where like pine nuts, for example, like increase circulation, mint increases circulation, which allows for erections to last for longer. Figs, like anything that looks sexual, like two avocados. And I think avocado in like some Aztec language is actually like known as testicles. It translates because they grow in pairs. So sometimes avocados or, you know, like figs for vaginas. So anything that is association is effective. Even oysters or pineapples, it doesn't matter what it is. Like, for example, they did a study with rats, and with rats, they like conditioned rats to think of lemons as arousing. Cause whenever they had a woman who was an estrus, not woman, sorry, female rat. Whenever like a female rat was an estrus, which is like their horny cycle, they would like spray lemon. And so then after a while, the rats would like prefer a lemony scented rat versus a non-lemony one. So just like, and that's not real, it's made up. So whatever it is, it doesn't matter. If you think oysters are sexual, they are sexual. If you think strawberries are sexual, if you think that, you know, there's no real proof that I've read that pineapples make your vagina taste better. But if eating a bunch of pineapples before makes you feel more comfortable receiving oral, then yes, it works. So that's why I just think with the relationship with food, whatever you believe is true, but there are some things that like do increase circulation. There are some things like water and apple cider vinegar and probiotics that do balance out your pH, which do allow you to be less concerned about aroma. Oh. So yes, it definitely applies, but it, even if it doesn't apply, even just thinking that it does is still good.
Right. Do you think that like sex is kind of like swimming where you should wait a certain period of time after eating to have it?
I mean, no, because some people love having sex and food together. Like they love combining it. That's what the beautiful thing about it is there's not really any like rules of when you can and can't, or like even period sex, you know, some people love it. It's their favorite time. So there's a lot of freedom that I think people don't take advantage of. So there's, you do what you want. If you want to have a meatloaf sandwich while you're having sex, by all means.
All right. You guys heard it from the expert. By all means. Well, let me ask you a few final plant questions and I'll let you go. What is your favorite plant party restaurant or planty restaurant?
What's my favorite planty restaurant? Let's think about it. LA is so chock filled with them. So now
all the options.
I like Cafe Gratitude. Cafe Gratitude, just because I love how they combine different flavors. This place called Cali Love, I think it's actually out here now too, but they do bowls. I love bowls. Bowls are delicious. Same. I used to love Sage a lot, but then I realized Sage is just a lot of cheating, pretending that you're eating healthy.
Right.
But those are also good sometimes too, because you get the balance of it all where you feel like a scumbag, but not super scummy.
Yeah. A plant-based scumbag.
There's tons. I think LA is a great city to ask that question in.
Yeah. You've got them all. Well, we have a lot too here in New York. What is your favorite plant to eat? Your sexiest favorite plant to eat?
I think basil. Like I'm looking at a basil right now. And I honestly, like, I don't use it. It's like a special treat because I hate picking it. But yeah, I love basil. I think it just, it adds, I like adding it to water as well too. Like I might like do strawberries and some basils and put it in some water and like a nice little flavored water.
Ooh, spa water. Fancy.
Right?
What's your most used kitchen tool?
Probably a sharp knife.
Oh, nice. Good one.
It's a boring answer, but.
No, yeah, I love it.
Well, I'll give you my fancy cool one. I have this cucumber spiral thing that like, it's like a cheese grater for cucumbers. You just twist it and turn it in and then it turns your cucumbers. You can use it as pasta. You can use it in your salads. Like that's like my most favorite fancy.
Ooh, okay. So we got a fancy tool and a practical tool.
Yeah.
What is a book besides your own that's really inspired you in some awesome way?
I really liked She Comes First by Dr. Ian Kerner. I think it just opened up. It's written by a man and it's about women's sexuality, which I hate that's affirming, but it was affirming to hear a man, you know, talk about the clitoris and talk about its importance and talk about, you know, him even coming to terms with the fact that like, oh my gosh, my penis doesn't stop fires and save babies. Like it's not the be all and end all of sexuality. So that book was like one of the ones I recommend to guys. I think it's also not as intimidating because it's written by a man. And I think it's, you know, nice for women as well too. But there's another book that's called Come As You Are. I don't know who the author is, but I'm reading that right now.
I have that book. I have it. Yeah. I haven't started reading it yet.
Okay. Well, listen, we can do a little book club. I'm like probably at page 80 right now.
Okay. I'll try to catch up if I get over my prude self. Any advice for me being less of a prude?
Embrace it. Embrace yourself. Okay. I was like, I love the quote, meet yourself where you are. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because the more that you tell yourself like, oh, meet me at the gas station down the street at 4 p.m. You know, when you tell your friend that and your friend doesn't come till 4:05, so you might be late. Maybe your friend goes to the wrong gas station. You get lost. It's like, if you just picked your friend up at her damn house, you would have avoided this. So meet yourself exactly where you are. Don't make yourself go any further and then see, play it by ear from that point. So we're talking right now. So we're already like in the right step of you have a book. You maybe even read it, but it's still there. Like you're working at your own pace and you're doing a good job.
Thank you. Really appreciate that. Well, where can everybody go to rock it some more with the Shan booty?
You know, I always say to people, it's not like the biggest thing you could probably do is hear something in this interview that you're like, oh, maybe it's love languages, maybe it's sex languages, maybe it's about your breaks or whatever it is. And you go and look up that thing.
Yeah.
Like that's probably the coolest thing that you could do from this.
And I really like those things that you just listed, the love language, sex language, and the breaks was really impactful on me. I didn't know that was a thing. I've never even heard of that. There was one other thing, the breaks. I mean, it's not the word turn on, but it was like a word that you said that meant kind of like what turns you on.
I think it's accelerator.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
But you're going to read all about this in the Come As You Are.
Okay,
so
Come As You Are.
In like a week, you're going to be like, girl, I'm a pro. Listen, stop talking. I'll let them know.
These are my accelerators. These are my breaks.
Yes. You're going to know.
So what's your online home where, I mean, you do so much. You have your amazing, hilarious and informative YouTube videos, your Instagram, you're rocking it. You have a Facebook show, which that's awesome, where you help couples that might need to break up, decide if they should break up or stay together.
That's it. You did a great job.
Wow. Yeah, that's so great. I did introduce you at the Good Fest. So, you know, I have an advantage here.
Which I think I'm going to the Philadelphia one. I'm really excited about
good.
That. Yeah, so I'm excited. That's like September or something, or is it
August?
It's August. Yeah. I wasn't that far off. But yeah, just look up anything Shan Booty or Shan Boodram. But like I said, you'll find me if you're meant to find me. Just like instead, just educate yourself. That's probably more accessible.
How altruistic of you! You don't even care if people.
Well,
come.
I just know. You know what I mean? Like, you know when people say the end of stuff, like go on Twitter and follow. Never in my life have I done that ever. But if there's something that they said that piqued my interest, I may have done that. So I don't want to make my last call out an unrealistic thing that you're just not going to do. So,
I love that. All right. Yeah. Well, maybe you will meet again with Shan or maybe you won't. We will let fate decide.
Ooh, I love it. How ominous. Okay.
Thank you so much for coming on and sharing all this and having this conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thank you too for having a party in my place.
Yeah.
All right, bye, Talia.
Bye. Thanks so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. I hope you're feeling like you've got a good handle on how to get your freak on more, but also how to normalize it. My biggest takeaways from this chat are A, cuddling counts, yay. B, embracing my prudeness is A-okay, also yay. And C, even an expert like Shan can get in her head while having sex, which makes me totally not an insane person. Definitely a third yay. If you can think of a friend who might want to hear this chat about healthfully romping in the hay, please share it with them. And you know what? I think treating yourself to your first FabFitFun box, stuffed to the brim with full-size beauty, fitness, and lifestyle products, might make you feel a little extra flirty, okay? Check out FabFitFun.com and use the code PARTY10 so you can save $10 off your first box, making it only $39.99. Again, that's FabFitFun.com and use the code PARTY10 at checkout to save 10 bones. You deserve to treat yourself. And for a really thorough recap about partying in your pants, plus a heck of a lot of other stuff about partying in your plants, head to PartyInMyPlants.com/86.